What if I told you in 100 years that pregnancy would almost always be successful, with much less risk of miscarriage or life-threatening conditions for the baby? Let me introduce you to Nadia, who's 7 months pregnant with her first child. Nadia's mother had a rare congenital heart disease and only lived to 45. It's hereditary. Nadia was lucky enough to avoid it directly, but she's known since the age of 18 that she's a carrier for the condition, which means the chances of passing it on to her children were high. But that's not going to happen. This congenital heart condition has been under the watchful eye of research scientists. They took cells from people with the same condition, and they used them to create stem cell embryo models, embryonic stage clones of the person. By creating thousands and thousands of replicas, they were able to follow their development and pinpoint the moments the heart's early development diverged from the typical pathway. Nadia won't pass the condition to the next generation, thanks to a precision medication she took in week 5 of her pregnancy. Nadia doesn't exist. This story hasn't happened yet, but it could. I'm Marnie Chesterton. I'm a science journalist, and I explore our big questions about science. I'm joined by Dr. Naomi Morris from the Francis Crick Institute. Hello, Naomi.
Hello.
Can I ask what you do at the Crick?
I'm a group leader of a lab called the Developmental Models Lab. And what we do is we work with stem cells and try and examine how they interact with one another for the purposes of forming embryo models. So we're trying to understand early human development by using stem cells.
Okay. How much do we understand about early human development right now?
Well, we understand a lot about the very first time points in development. So since IVF, we are able to mix sperm and egg and get a fertilized egg cell and watch as that cell divides and even as it undergoes implantation in the lab. But we have to stop all experiments on human embryos at day 14. So we're not allowed to go beyond that time point. And so we know a lot about that initial time point. We know quite a lot about some of the later time points of development because there are these big collections that exist of human embryo material that researchers can use. But there's a massive gap in the middle of that. So between day 14 and about weeks 4 to 6 that we just know so little about that we just don't understand that time point.
So that's kind of a black box.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of these unknown unknowns. We don't even know what we don't understand about that time point. We just have very little, if no data at that time point.
And the scientists are curious people. So that's a box you want to open.
Definitely. I mean, it's probably the most transformational time point of development because the embryo is changing from something where you've just got a few cells to something that then has a body plan and organs and skin on the outside and a brain at the top. And we really don't understand how that transformation happens. It's also the time point where things go wrong. So it's the time point where miscarriages can happen or birth defects, particularly congenital abnormalities, can happen. So better understanding how the embryo normally does it might help us predict or understand better when things go wrong and why they go wrong.
Okay, and as you've said, there's a limit for embryos, studying them up to 14 days. Where do stem cells come in?
So stem cells allow us to study the processes that the cells of the early embryo would do. So in an early embryo, the cells interact with one another and they signal to one another, and that's how we end up setting up the organization of the body and how we end up with organs. And we can do the same thing with stem cells. We put them together, allow them to interact, and watch the same processes unfold in a dish. So it's a way of us basically understanding some of those processes in a lab environment rather than having to use actual embryos.
We've got Nadia, and she's got this congenital heart disease. She's a carrier for it. So what we're saying is that stem cell clones of people who've suffered with this congenital heart disease have been studied in thousands and thousands of embryo models and they've worked out what goes wrong. Is that a likely scenario?
I think it's possible that we could use patient-derived cells to better understand how some of these congenital abnormalities arise, definitely. And we're starting to do that now in the lab. I mean, researchers are trying to use patient-derived cells to better predict the mechanisms by which things go wrong. So we have quite a good understanding of the fact that a gene mutation might cause a defect, but we often don't know how that gene defect causes a defect.
So currently with embryos, the limit that you can keep them for is 14 days. Can you keep embryo models for longer? And in future, if we could keep embryo models for longer, would that allow us to look inside this black box?
Mm. So it's a major question mark, really, for us to answer as a society. How long do we want to be able to culture these things for? Do we want to apply the same restrictions that we have on embryo research to embryo model research? At the moment, embryo models kind of fall between the cracks in that they're not covered by the legislation on embryo research, but they might well have features that we think are worth protecting or preventing from happening. So there's a big push from scientists actually to get more clarity about where we should be allowed to go with this research and what limits there should be. So for example, there in the UK, there's a team of scientists and ethicists and lawyers who are teaming up to come up with a set of voluntary guidelines about where we might stop research or how we might make decisions about which research is allowed and which research should stop. But it should be a wider question for the public, really. What do we think about these embryo models and where do we want to draw the lines? What do we think should be allowed and shouldn't be allowed?
Well, I guess it would help to know, what was it about 14 days? Was it the development of any particular structure within the embryo that meant, okay, this is the point we want to stop researching with them?
I mean, it's fascinating. It's partly scientific and it's partly arbitrary in the kind of boundary of 14 days. So at 14 days, the embryo, which is essentially just a flat disc of cells, starts to determine which side is its head and which side is its tail. And that distinction means that if you were to chop the embryo in half before that time point, you would probably end up with two completely normal fetuses. The embryo can cope with being cut in half. But after that time point, if you cut it in half, you wouldn't end up with two parts that were equal. And so said that at that time point, you have this thing called individualization. The embryo has kind of become an individual because it's decided which end is its top and which end is its tail. And the other half of that, the flip side of that, is that it is partially arbitrary. 14 days is a very easy regulation to have because everyone can count to 14. And it's almost a kind of social compromise between allowing scientists to do some research to allow us to understand early embryo development, but also reassuring the public that there is a limit, that we're not going to carry on this research for too long and into domains where there might be ethical questions about doing that research on later stage embryos.
So just to clarify, there's nothing like development of, I don't know, pain or a heartbeat that we're looking at as the point where we stop.
No, I mean, I think the good thing about the 14-day rule on embryo research is that it stops everything subsequent to that. So we don't actually have to put our fingers on what is the thing that we want to prevent from happening. Whereas embryo models, of course, reopen that question because we might well make an embryo model that starts at day 15, and then how long do we want to be allowed to culture that thing for? Is there anything we don't want to happen in a dish? Do we not want it to feel pain? Do we not want it to have a beating heart or any other feature? And I think it reopens a lot of those questions about where we should draw the lines.
But presumably scientists who want to study what goes wrong in, I don't know, chronic pain or maybe congenital heart problems would want to look specifically at those features.
Yeah, and I think there are huge benefits if we could better understand these stages of development. As you say, understanding congenital abnormalities, being able to develop drugs that might help us kind of prevent or even cure some of these defects. So there are huge benefits to society in being allowed to do the research. It's always a trade-off between the kind of ethical concerns that people might have and the impacts to society, and how we find that balance, I think, is going to be interesting.
Are there things scientists can do to mitigate against potential concerns? So, you know, if we're talking about concerns about an embryo model feeling pain.
Definitely. I mean, I think one of the most surprising features of these stem cell-based embryo models is that they're very modular. They're almost like Lego bricks. You can add in certain elements or take them away. So we might want to, for example, make an embryo model that doesn't have any nervous system or doesn't have a central nervous system, for example. There might be other things that we could take away or add in to kind of mitigate some of those ethical issues. So it gives us a lot of flexibility, really, in terms of how we design the experiments and what outcomes we want to see from the experiments, what it is that we want to learn from making these models.
It sounds like in the future, with these embryo models, we might be able to get more of a picture of early human development past this 14-day stage. How is that going to help ultimately with pregnancy?
So we might be able to use embryo models to better understand or to tweak conditions to improve IVF outcomes. We might be able to better understand how the embryo implants into the uterus, which might then lower the kind of rate of miscarriage if we could better understand exactly those interactions that happen between the embryo and the uterus. And we may even be able to kind of prevent deaths, stillbirths, these sorts of conditions that happen slightly later on in development that often we don't understand the causes of these events. And so perhaps using embryo models might allow us to better understand and hopefully prevent some of those outcomes.
So if there's a black box, up till now, how have scientists tried to understand it?
So we have access to embryo material often donated from terminations, which allows us to explore what embryos look like at different stages of development, particularly the later stages of development. But it's very rare to access material before kind of 6 weeks of development. And so the only examples that we do have, there have been kind of two samples that we've had access to in the last few years that we've been able to look at the gene expression in the early embryo and also the spatial organization of the early embryo. But we have no certainty that these are not unusual embryos. So it's really just those two samples that we're kind of pinning most of our understanding on.
Hang on. So what stage of development has science only got two samples for?
Between about 14 days and maybe 28 days of development. And the little that we know, we're kind of having to piece together from these kind of disparate sources rather than having access to a dynamically changing embryo.
Why are there only two samples?
Well, it's very hard to access material that early on, just because women don't necessarily know that they're pregnant. They might not have access to terminations that early. And they're also just incredibly small. So even if you did obtain the material, the chances of you finding a tiny embryo is very low.
What advantages would embryo models allow for researching this early black box stage?
So partly it's scale. We can make millions of stem cells and we can culture them basically indefinitely. So that means that we can make not just hundreds, but thousands or even millions of these embryo models. So things like screening or knocking out particular genes is really easy with a stem cell-based embryo model. And also to some extent, we're learning by doing, by putting stem cells together. We're learning more about the logic by which embryos or cells build embryos. And so that gives us a kind of unique perspective, really, of building from the bottom up rather than just accessing an embryo that's kind of fully complete. So we're learning in the process as well as learning by doing.
All our views on this are important. The scientists working on this today want your help so they know what you care about. As the public, what benefits do we want to see from this research? What's okay and what's not? Where are our red lines? Everyone needs to be part of the conversation because this research will affect our lives and the future of generations to come. And it's fast moving, so we need the law to keep up. The time is now. We want to hear your thoughts. Share them with us.